And Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Ohm Foods, serving organic, non-GMO whole foods, including wild-caught mahi-mahi, and having the largest vegan menu in downtown Chico. Ohm Foods serves homemade teas and lemonade, acai bowls and smoothies blended with coconut water, and they're located at 142 Broadway, just two blocks from Chico State. They're open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. and on Saturday from 11 to 3, with to-go and catering available. For more info, go to iloveohmfoods.com or find them on Facebook. And we're happy to say we're made possible by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. To show 1927, the July 3rd, 2019 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal news, animal rights, and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org. I hope everyone is getting ready for a safe and sane long weekend for the 4th of July without tanks or other military paraphernalia.
On today's show, we'll be sharing some seasonal news about the quiet fireworks that some towns are holding. Then we'll learn about a vegan company suing the state of Missouri for its capricious meat labeling laws, followed by a story about a vegan-friendly food bank in Toronto, and we'll end with a follow-up story on a so-called conservation effort in the Farallon Island National Wildlife Refuge using potent rodenticides. Jeannie?
Thanks, Danny. Canada Day fireworks in Banff go off without a bang.
No way.
The town switched over to a pyrotechnics display like you might see at a rock concert. And instead of firing traditional fireworks for its holiday celebrations going forward, so as not to terrify the thousands of animals, wild and domestic, that live in the area. Deputy Mayor Corey DiMano told the Toronto Globe and Mail newspaper that the town wanted to minimize the impact on wildlife and the surrounding national park, as loud fireworks can be stressful to wildlife. Moving to special effects pyrotechnics helps the town to walk the talk, so to speak. The town considers itself a leader in this area of environmental preservation, so it wanted to make sure that it was doing all that it could. A local environmental group, the Bow Valley Naturalists, suggested the idea, saying that anybody who's had a cat and dog in the vicinity of a fireworks show knows often what it's like. You've got a pet adapted to an urban environment, and often they run away or hide under the bed. So you can imagine the impact that might have on wild animals. Beyond your cowering canine, there's evidence that traditional fireworks displays aren't good for animals. Birds tend to flee en masse from them. In 2010, 5,000 blackbirds dropped out of the sky at a New Year celebration in Beebe, Arkansas. Deer are known to fling themselves into roads and cars. Horses have been known to have heart attacks and to keel over. Shelters in the United States say the day after Independence Day is the busiest for them because of all the runaway dogs, terrified and confused by the noise. Jasper, an alpine town in Canada's Alberta province and the commercial center of Jasper National Park, canceled their Canada Day fireworks because of wildfire concerns. Some sensible towns, right?
Yep.
Low-noise fireworks are also gaining popularity elsewhere. The Calgary Zoo switched to low-noise fireworks in 2012, and an Italian town, Colecchio, banned regular fireworks back in 2015. Making quiet fireworks is a fairly straightforward feat of engineering. Fireworks consist of two stages, a propellant charge, which shoots it into the air, and the main body, which contains an explosive charge and the material that makes the pretty patterns. You can control how loud the firework is by changing the chemical composition of the explosive charge and how tightly you wrap it, just as you can control the colors and patterns. Regular fireworks tend to use aluminum metal as one of their fuels, which raises the explosion temperature, and the package is usually wrapped very tightly. The pressure builds up inside a tightly wrapped container, and then when it bursts open, it creates the shock that you feel at a fireworks show. On a technical level, quiet fireworks use more black powder as opposed to metallic powder, and the package is wrapped more loosely. That was like more than I ever knew about fireworks construction.
Fascinating.
Quiet fireworks can actually be more colorful. All fireworks are a balance between color-producing material in the shell versus the boom-producing material. And since quiet fireworks don't need as much boom, they have more room for colors. The explosion is also more concentrated since the lack of an explosive boom means the colors aren't flung as far in the sky. The vote from the town council supporting the quiet fireworks was unanimous on this issue and has had a ripple effect amongst some other communities that are trying to be more environmentally aware. And that was an article actually from last year's Globe and Mail by Jack Howen.
Cool.
Yeah. I think also on the run-up to the show, we heard the Paradise update, the campfire update by Matt Fidler, and he talked about, safe and sane fireworks. Yeah. And I want to say the impact of those backyard fireworks is just as significant on your, obviously, of companion animals. And also, you know, we have a lot of birds and critters that live in our trees, our heavily beautiful treed community. So be aware of that, folks.
It's far from sane to be setting off fireworks in this country. By country, I mean North State right now.
In this part of the world, yeah.
Professional displays, that's one thing. But even the safe and sane ones, just setting them off, it's bad news. And let's not talk about the illegal fireworks trade.
All right. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. And now, over to you, Danny. Also, by the way, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you. I come and go like the wind. As we've reported for a few years now, vegan options have never been better. This 4th of July, we can grill up a choice of plant-based burgers, sausages, and hot dogs, dressing them with egg-free mayonnaise and dairy-free cheese before finishing off with a scoop or two of vegan ice cream. Not all together. You should eat these separately. But not everyone is happy about it. State by state, meat and dairy industries have found sympathetic, let's say possibly conservative legislators, and pushed for bills to restrict the way these products are labeled in stores, arguing that foods can only be called milk if they are the result of lactation and only be called meat if it's from a slaughtered animal. This follows decades of relatively little resistance by the dairy industry amid a recent explosion of dairy-free milks made from soy, almonds, oats, and a host of other ingredients. Now the plant-based industry is fighting back. Earlier this week, vegan meat maker Upton's Naturals Company and the Plant-Based Foods Association, a trade group, sued Mississippi's governor and agricultural and commerce commissioner in federal court, arguing labeling restrictions violate their First Amendment right to free speech by preventing them from using the phrases consumers understand, like meatless meatballs and vegan chorizo. Mississippi's law, passed in March and effective on Monday of this week, says that plant-based foods cannot be labeled as meat or a meat food product. It doesn't matter if the product also states on the label that it's 100% vegan, plant-based, or meatless. If the product uses the word meat or another word that links it to the animal product it's meant to substitute, then it will run afoul of the law. The lawsuit alleges that the restrictive and biased legislation is a direct result of lobbying by meat groups, which, I mean, of course it is. Michelle Simon, the executive director of the Plant-Based Foods Association, which represents Upton's and more than 140 other companies, says that her group's position is that the proper arena to address competition is the marketplace.
Imagine that.
That's, you know, isn't that what people like to say about America? And directly speaking to consumers, it's not to go to sympathetic legislators to do your bidding. Mississippi's Department of Agriculture and Commerce, along with the state's cattle and poultry associations, supported the state law that went into effect on July 1st. Andy Gibson, the Commissioner of Agriculture and Commerce, which is a wordy phrase, who's also a cattle farmer, said in an interview before the lawsuit was filed that alternative meat products have a place in the market, but the law ensures consumers are clear about what they're buying. In particular, the meat industry doesn't want to end up like the dairy industry, which is always seeing new milks materialize grocery aisles.
I just think, it's, you know, you kind of commented a little on that. Mississippi has a commissioner of agriculture and commerce. It's the same person.
Yeah, it's the same
thing. As opposed to, say, you know, at the cabinet level, federal cabinet level, we have a secretary of commerce and we have a secretary of agriculture that's separate.
Yeah, this. Historical reasons it makes sense, but I bet it's not as relevant today. In response to the lawsuit, the Mississippi Department of Agriculture and Commerce, as aforementioned, said it has a, quote, duty and obligation to enforce the law, and that it wanted to ensure that consumers in the state have clear information on the meat and non-meat products they purchase. Quote, a food product made of insect protein should not be deceptively labeled as beef.
All right. As
really?
As it has happened.
So, you know, they're making stuff up here. Anyway, continuing with the quote, someone looking to purchase tofu should not be tricked into buying lab-grown animal protein, Gibson said in a statement. Words mean something. This is pretty clever. I mean, thinly veiled, he's trying to appeal to the actual vegetarians also, saying they're going to get lab-grown meat. Plant-based meat substitutes are growing fast, with retail sales climbing 10% to almost $900 million in the 12 months through May 25th, according to a recent marketing survey. That's still a pittance compared to the $90 billion that animal meat brought in, but it's enough to get the industry's attention. Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation President Mike McCormick said that after the bill passed in the Mississippi House of Representatives in January, that the bill would protect our cattle farmers from having to compete with products not harvested from an animal. That attitude is what caught the eye of Justin Pearson, the attorney at the Institute for Justice, a nonpartisan libertarian public interest law firm that filed the suit. The lawsuit isn't about money for Pearson. The suit only seeks $1 in damages. Rather, he wants to stop the law's enforcement on the understanding that businesses have the right to use the terms that consumers understand. Upton Naturals founder Dan Stackman isn't quite sure how the law is going to impact his business, which has grown at rates of 50% to 100% each year in the past 5 years. Complying with the law could require us to change all of the company's packaging, even just by changing the terms themselves. It could potentially make it more difficult for consumers to find the products they're looking for. This article was posted on Bloomberg News on July 2nd, 2019, by Dina Schenker and Lydia Mulvaney.
I just think it's nice to see see Upton's Natural and this Plant-Based Food Marketing Association take the upper hand, right? Mm-hmm. They're not waiting until someone gets fined for using this so misleading meat label on their products or burgers or whatever they want to call them. They're saying no. This is just a flawed law from the get-go.
Yeah, so. It's my running joke is that unless you're sauteing veggies and peanut butter, you can figure it out.
Pretty much, right? Yeah, so, and I think that the article made some nice points about the dairy industry just watching its business be eroded by equivalent plant-based options.
Yeah, I mean, we're not free market capitalism, right? We're an oligarchy controlled by the richer interest, and so it's only a free market until the richest guy is being threatened, and then he takes money and goes to the legislator and lobbies, which is also known as bribes, them to enact special laws for them.
Yeah, and then you look and see that, as the article stated, $900 million is the plant-based sector.
Right, versus billions.
Versus, $90 billion. So they are very threatened by even the smallest incursion. So keep on running scared because...
Yeah, it's coming.
It's coming. All right, thanks, Danny. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. What do we have next, Danny?
Next is the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank in Ontario, which is exactly what it sounds like, a nonprofit food bank that caters strictly to vegetarians and vegans who find that traditional food banks are lacking in fresh produce and non-meat options. When applying as a client, people are asked if they have purchased chicken or fish. If they say yes, they're told they wouldn't be able to use the bank's services. I'm not sure why they don't ask about beef. It's confusing. But basically, they're saying if you typically are buying meat, they actually won't help you, even if you are still qualifying for a food bank. And while that sounds harsh, the food bank's 32-year-old vegan director, Matt Noble, told Vice News that the food bank can't serve everyone. And if it did, vegetarians would be screwed again.
Those are his words.
Yes. The Toronto vegetarian, you know, this is like whenever you make a nice vegetarian vegan dish for a potluck and you go and all the hamburger eaters are eating your dish because they're like, this is really good and I never get to eat this stuff. And then the vegetarians are like, well, there goes all our food.
Exactly. I mean, like, I believe in, you know, what I call cupcake activism, but sometimes it hurts.
Yeah.
You go home hungry.
The Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank has turned people away if they said they ate meat, but they are referred to other programs that will help them out. In a time when foodieism has out-parodied itself with self-diagnosed gluten intolerances, organic gummy bears, and celebrity-endorsed charcoal cleanses, don't do these. The idea of a vegetarian food bank may sound absurd, but considering more Canadians are having to access food banks, they're starting to resemble America. It doesn't hurt to have more food options. Across Canada, about 800,000 people turn to the nation's 450 food banks. Other organizations that have popped up in recent years as another way to help low-income families with access to healthy foods include the Stop Community Food Center, Food Share, and Community Food Centers. These are all the British center spelling. Noble, who is also a staunch animal rights activist, told Vice News that he wants the food bank system to reflect the city's diverse diets and needs. He said that, quote, food banks are in place because people are down on their luck. We don't want people to sacrifice their health or morals because of that. We also get people whose doctors told them to stop eating meat or cut down on sugar, so that's why they're here. Starting from scratch, Noble crowdsourced $10,000 in online donations to open the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank, which operates like a pop-up on the third Saturday of every month. In January, 36 people showed up, followed by 57 in February, 88 in March, and this month they are expecting 100. The people who show up at this bank are as diverse as Toronto is. Students, newly landed immigrants, elderly women with festively decorated walkers, middle-aged men, moms with their kids in tow, people of all ethnicities and ages. It's far from the hippie granola crowd you'd expect. No offense to the hippie granola crowd. New clients meet with volunteers who go over their financial situation and household side to assess how much food they can get. After that, a volunteer guides them around the room to each table asking what they'd like, not unlike having a personal shopper. They start at the grains and legumes station with reusable bags of flour, rice, dried chickpeas and lentils, packets of oatmeal, boxes of whole wheat spaghetti.
And buckets.
Yeah, bucket of spaghetti sounds kind of good, actually. Then it's on to the soy milk, canned tomato sauce, granola bars, bread, and tofu. And finally, there's a wall of produce stocked with limes, apples, broccoli, bananas, and more.
That's like a shopping list.
Yeah. It is kind of like a shopping list here. It's a bit random. Noble is cautious when asked about long-term goals, as there are only enough funds to keep the monthly food bank open through August. It's a bare-bones operation. Noble has a day job, so most of his fundraising and organizing efforts are done in the evenings and weekends. The food bank's number is his cell phone, so he's constantly fielding queries from the public and what he hopes are potential sponsors. He drives to the food warehouse in the morning to stock his car full of vegetables. His sister and her boyfriend serve free bowls of soup upstairs. Quote, ideally, a food bank would never be necessary, says Noble, as he stops mid-sentence to answer another call. But right now, we're just trying to get to the end of the year.
He sounds like he's going to be overwhelmed shortly. But
right.
I do think it's interesting that, this food bank is designed to reflect the needs of a diverse population and the needs. And I particularly was interested in that point about it allowing people to keep their morals intact. That's a hard ask a lot of times, to ask society to give you, you know, what you, to offer what you need and what you want.
I think I'm not going to claim I know much about food banks at all. But let me speculate anyway, because this is the radio. In California, probably at food banks, you're going to get more fresh produce and more vegetables and things because you're in California.
Yeah.
I bet in Canada, if you're going to a food bank, you're probably going to get less of that because it's expensive and it's imported. And so it's probably even a bigger deal in places where you don't have such an abundance of resources to have a specific
option. Yeah, that was definitely a point in one of the sidebars for this article was that this one in particular offered really worked hard to get pick up donations of produce and fruit for folks to get. So, all right. Well, that is, and we can talk about, like, is it fair to offer a food bank that is so selective about who its customers are? I don't know that I agree with that 100%, but obviously this was a labor of love by one very dedicated individual to see if it would fly, you know? So, anyway. All right. You've been listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino, and you just heard Danny Toms talking about two animal and vegan-related news articles. Our last story, is we have one more follow-up piece that I didn't expect. It's a follow-up piece of news about those deadly second-generation anticoagulant rodenticides that we've been talking about. In the last two episodes, we talked about these really lethal rodenticides and their effect on mountain lion populations, as well as other wild animal populations in California, and about some legislation that is underway in California to actually ban these. Little did I know that this was going to come up in connection with a national wildlife refuge. I really never expected to hear these lethal environmental poisons being used in wildlife refuges. I was surprised to learn from KPIX News that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Department is floating a controversial plan to dump 1.5 tons of poison pellets on the Farallon Islands National Wildlife Refuge to get rid of an infestation of mice. The Farallon Islands are an essential breeding ground for all kinds of seabirds, including one particularly threatened species called the ashy storm petrel. Half of the world's population of this rare bird comes from the Farallon Islands. And if you don't know where the Farallon Islands are, they are, I think they're about like 45 or an hour minute boat ride outside of the San Francisco Bay. Mm-hmm. So under the Golden Gate Bridge, head due west, and there are the Farallon Islands, a really unique ecosystem.
I've sailed my yacht out there many times.
I'm hoping to go on a naturalist tour of them later this year. Anyway, during the gold rush, sailors introduced accidentally house mice, the house mouse, to the islands, and now at times the place is overrun with house mice. Federal Fish and Wildlife spokesman Doug Cordell told KPIX News that sometimes, quote, you can see the grass move with the mice, so it's a plague-like infestation, end quote. The department says about six burrowing owls have migrated to the island to eat the mice, and when the mouse population dies down in the winter, the owls then feed on the petrel chicks. So to discourage the owls, officials are proposing dropping 3,000 pounds of poison pellets on the islands to eradicate the mice. Fish and Wildlife says that the poison pellets are the only method that's been proven in the field to be 100% lethal, to accomplish 100% eradication. If you don't eliminate every single mouse, that population will rebound. But if the plan seems like a strange way to protect nature, the folks at WildCare Wildlife Hospital in San Rafael would agree with you. Communication Director Allison Hermance says that their research on poisoned animals helped get the proposed second-generation anticoagulant poison called Brodificum banned for public sale in California, telling KPIX News that, quote, for 6 to 8 burrowing owls, it just seems like overkill to dump multiple metric tons of bait containing an incredibly toxic and incredibly persistent and an incredibly dangerous toxic poison all over a national marine sanctuary.
I mean, do we have to say that? Like, that's madness.
Right? Yes, it's madness. And so, as we've talked about on prior shows, the situation with these second-generation anticoagulant poisons is you cannot buy them for residential use. You as a consumer cannot purchase this stuff at Lowe's or something. But it is still legal to be used by professional pest control companies and evidently by the national... at a national wildlife refuge. Hermance went on to explain that a bird who eats one of the poisoned mice will also be poisoned, including the burrowing owls and the western gulls. Fish and Wildlife's own website acknowledges this, but says they plan to capture the owls and haze the gulls away during 3 weeks of treatment. But Hermance from WildCare says that won't be so easy, saying that, quote, Western gulls are the birds that swoop down and pick French fries out of your hand. These are not birds that are going to be easily intimidated, end quote. Richard Charter, a senior fellow with the Ocean Foundation, says killing birds to save birds is not an appropriate strategy, saying that, quote, the critical issue here is bykill, the accidental mortality or sickening of non-target wildlife. It sounds very strange, but that's what Fish and Wildlife is saying we need to accept, and I don't think we're in the mood to accept it. Fish and Wildlife says using poison bait has been used successfully around the world to eliminate rodents. Opponents say there's got to be a better way. And that was a report from the June 27th, 2019 broadcast of KPIX News in the Bay Area. This proposed plan is actually going to be discussed at a meeting of the California Coastal Commission on July 10th in San Luis Obispo. The public comment period opened up on June 28th and will continue through this Friday, July 5th, 2019. I have posted a link if you are interested in submitting a comment on this proposal to the California Coastal Commission. That'll be in our show notes on our Facebook page at Non-Human Radio. So, let's see, I have some other little points about this. I just want to say a previous poison drop proposal from the Fish and Wildlife Service was abandoned by the Obama administration in 2013 because it was too risky to this marine sanctuary and an unacceptable threat to adjacent fragile coastal ecosystems. So this, it's like some kind of zombie proposal, right? If the only tool you think you have is rodenticide, that's the proposal that's going to keep popping up because it's already been scoped out and planned. And you know how much it's going to cost.
So. Yeah, what I'm missing here is I guess they think that, obviously they said they can remove the owls and that the owls are actually the problem, not the mice.
Right?
So their concern is maybe we have to come back in a year and remove owls again. It's like, so what? You know, like metric tons of poison on an island 40 miles west of San Francisco that will flow to the sea, that the birds will eat and die, fall in the ocean, a shark will eat the bird, the shark will die. As it's, and so it goes. Yeah. It's clearly
it's a bad idea.
And we have scientists somewhere in this nation. Like, this is not wise.
Somewhere. Yeah. I think they're all getting ready to protest.
Well, they're probably not working for the government anymore.
All right. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
All right. Now it's time for the Chico Vegan Animal Rights Calendar of Events. What do you got, Jeannie?
Thanks, Danny. Short and sweet today. Very short and sweet. Friday, July 4th, from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., local vegan chef Dang Vegan, a.k.a. Chris Hudson, will be flipping vegan burgers and mixing up other vegan barbecue delights like hot dogs, macaroni salad, corn on the cob, and cold watermelon at Tender Loving Coffee's Vegan 4th of July Barbecue from 2 to 8 p.m. And there will also be activities for kids and live music by Webster Moore. And that'll be at Tender Loving Coffee at 365 East 6th Street in Chico. For more information and for tickets, go to the Tender Loving Coffee Facebook page or to their event at eventbrite.com. And that's it for the calendar. If you have an event to share, send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And as always, we have one last piece of business to close out today's show, and that is the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from Michelin-starred chef Raymond Blanc, a famously French chef who is now one of Britain's most beloved and respected chefs. Quote, "Vegetarianism and veganism are not a trend, but an important change based on knowledge and awareness that we, be it chefs, home cooks, and retailers alike, must embrace. Embrace knowledge, awareness, and compassion, and let's make the world a better place for humans and non-humans." Show notes and links to the articles mentioned in today's show will be posted to the Non-Human Radio Facebook page and to the Instagram account under Chico Vegan.
All right. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, its underwriters, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, farmed, raced, hunted, experimented upon, have metric tons of poison airdropped upon them, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. Please stay tuned for KZVAR's weekly public affairs program, The Real Issue, coming up next from 6 to 7 p.m. Have a great weekend, everyone, and thank you for listening.
This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be a little different, be a little better, be a lot kinder.
And go vegan.
Mixing it up.